So we're in a series entitled Asking for a Friend, and maybe you've heard that phrase, and that's where people sometimes are a little bit uncomfortable asking a question for themselves, and so they say, well, I have a friend who, and we're looking at some of those kind of questions, and I just want to give you a little bit of a heads up here. If you are a parent and you have a child in the room, we're going to talk about some issues that relate to adulthood here, and if I had to put kind of a rating on it, we're never going to be inappropriate here, but I might put a PG-13 there, and you still have time to take your kids over to the children's area where they're not going to be talking about these issues today, and just wanted you to have fair warning in here and know that is coming. And also, I think that there's a real high probability that somewhere along the way here, in the time that we're going to talk about this, that pretty much everybody in the room is going to disagree. And can I just say, that's okay. I fear we live in a time where if we disagree, we don't respect anybody anymore, and that's unfortunate, right? I mean, we can have a different, you know, idea, a different belief, a different conviction, a different understanding, and hopefully still respect one another. And I might also go so far as to say there might be something here where it goes beyond disagreement, and maybe you feel some offense, and I hope and pray you stay all the way through and hear us talk about some issues today that are social issues of our day. And one of the questions that's often asked is, why are Christians so conservative on a lot of these social issues? And we're going to look at several of them here today. But let me give you a couple thoughts up front and a little bit of ground rules of how we're going to look at this issue. Isn't it true that we live in a time where so much is politicized, and there's so much of the politicized rhetoric that we're all traumatized as a result of that? And we're talking about the arena of faith today, which sometimes overlaps the arena of politics, but I think we need to go beyond that. And sometimes I wonder if in our day we've given in a little bit too much to the political discussion. There's a place for that, but that the whole faith arena operates a little bit differently. Here's what Martin Luther King Jr. said about that. The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state and never its tool. What I think this means for us, if we have put our hope and trust in the Jesus of the Bible, we're trying to follow God, this means that maybe there are times and ways in which we criticize and, you know, take to task our side of the political aisle. And I got to be honest with you, I don't hear a lot of that on social media or elsewhere. Well, how do you know that, you know, there are issues there? I mean, isn't all the issues over on that side and the other side? No, we're always right and all the issues are over there. And I would say that politics, because it is held by people, there are going to be issues all over the map. And so if we always say the issue is there and we never take our side to the task, I think we've missed something. And I'll tell you this too, about social media, or maybe as we just personally interact with people, if they know more about our politics and they know about our faith, we might need to rethink some things as well. But that's probably for another day. Three directions that we can look for truth and guidance on social issues. You know, how do we make decisions about certain things? Certainly, we don't just, you know, gaze at the stars and, you know, conclude something. We don't flip a coin, you know, and say, okay, we're going to land on this side of whatever line that is. We can look inward to ourselves. And how many people here would be honest enough to say, you know what, there's a time when I thought something and believed something and absolutely knew it was true and I was wrong? Anybody, you know, willing to admit that? The rest of you, you're in church. Come on. We need to be honest about that. And that doesn't mean we're always wrong, but it means there are times when we've been wrong and it's more than one time. And so we just need to own that we are probably not the most reliable place to go for understanding, because there's a lot of things we just don't know. Secondly, we can look outward to our culture. You know, where is our culture weighing in with different things? And the interesting part of this is that our culture hasn't always thought the same way about the same issues. And so what was cool, you know, maybe 100 years ago isn't cool anymore, and culture has kind of shifted. And so who's to say that maybe, you know, 50 or 100 years from now, they might look back at us and go, what were they thinking when they were doing that? But let me give you an example from history that kind of points out this whole idea that our culture changes. You know, the way that people were punished in America about 200 years ago was very different. wasn't a whole lot of jail system. The punishment was immediate, and it was often physical in nature. And here's what I mean by that. Here is one way that people received a punishment. It's called a ducking stool. And you were strapped into the stool on the end of this, and they would lower you under the water in a river or a lake or a pond and bring you back up and take you back down, and they would determine, you know, how long that was. If married couples were having trouble, there was actually a ducking stool where you were seated back to back, strapped in, and put under the water until you said, okay, I think we're willing to work it out, and we're thinking of instituting that as marriage counseling here at Washington Heights, so just know that before we go. People are like, yeah, okay, we can work it out, whatever it is, but this is not good. Now, this was normal 200 years ago, and now we go, what were they thinking? And I wonder, you know, in the future, if they're going to look back, what are they going to say about us, and what were we thinking? So culture can shift, and there's another direction we can look, and maybe you guessed that it was coming, and that was upward to God. That God has claimed to reveal reality to us. And whether you trust him or follow him, Jesus said these words, you know, the truth will set you free. And Jesus claimed to know the truth. And God claims to reveal reality to us, the way things really are. What is true? What is right? What is good? How do we become a good person? And those are some of the real important questions that are often difficult to answer, and we can look in God's direction for that. And so when we talk about a lot of the social issues that we're going to look at in a few moments, and there are others, many issues were biblical before they ever became political or social hot potatoes. So it's not that faith has just decided, hey, we're going to weigh in on this as well. There are things that have been in the Bible long before people ever had differing opinions about them. And so we need to understand that, you know, God has weighed in on these things often long before we ever talk about them. And here's where we come from with this thing called the Bible. All scripture is breathed out by God. The picture is that it comes out of the mouth of God, that it is his words. And profitable for teaching, that's what to do. For reproof, that's the opposite, that's what not to do. For correction, okay, I'm going here, but I need to bring my life into alignment with God. And training with righteousness. This is just establishing a pattern, a life that is following after God. Well, why? That the man of God, that's a generic term, the person of God may be competent, equipped for every good work. And so if you're new to Washington Heights, or maybe you haven't heard this before, you know, we believe that the Bible is our authority. And that a good God who longs for us to know him, to know ourselves, to know the way that we can follow after him, has communicated to us, and so that is going to be a primary place that we look. But even as you go to the Bible, right, we might say, well, does the Bible speak to everything? Well, there is a level of clarity called a command, where God just makes it real clear. For instance, you know, one of the Ten Commandments says, do not commit adultery. And not a lot of gray area there. We know what that is. That is what God has said is going to be something that is going to separate us from what his desire is for us and the best for us. And it's just real clear what that is. But the Bible doesn't speak to everything. And on that level, we need to apply some principles. And so maybe there are some things that the Bible talks about, and those principles can be applied in other places. Let me give you an example of that. In the New Testament somewhere, it says to greet one another with a holy kiss. Now, why don't we do that? Well, because you got a Germanic guy who's actually leading this thing. No, actually, we don't do that because that was a customary thing in the ancient Near East. But I think the principle of that is to be hospitable. And so that looks different in our day and time and our culture than it did then, but it's a principle that we can apply. And then there's also informed opinion. And I don't want to say just opinion because that sounds very random, but informed opinion takes what we know about God, what the Bible has said, brings common sense, our intellect to it, and some reasoning and some logic, and so we can also come to some conclusions based on that. Throughout what we're going to talk about here, these number of issues, we'll see all of these, and I'm going to try to be clear about which one we're talking about here. So with that in mind, let's jump into several social issues of our day, And as we make our way through this, I'm just going to say we're going to move fast. We're not going to say everything about everything on these issues, but more the point is, how can we think about these things, and how can we look to God as well as what God has given us the opportunity to know? How about smoking weed? Why are Christians so conservative about smoking weed? Now, we live in a state where it is not yet legal to do that. We're surrounded by states. Recently, I was in Washington, D.C., walking on the National Mall, and there was Mary Jane smell all over the place there. It's legal there, and we think, okay, so if it does become legal in Utah, is it cool, right? Because it's legal. And I would hope that we would recognize that there are many times it's not just about legal or illegal, right? Technically, adultery is legal. There's no, you know, it's not a crime. But is it something that God has for us? Well, no. So how do we think about something like smoking weed? And you'll never in the New Testament see anybody rolling a doobie, you know, and lighten up there, because it just wasn't an issue that they had back then. And I'll admit to you up front, you know, I grew up in the 70s. I have done this, and I inhaled as well. And all the older people got that. So how do we think about this? Here's Ephesians chapter 5. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. Well, that's not talking about smoking weed, right? It's talking about getting drunk. Here's the principle, and I would even say this is a command, that if you follow the Jesus of the Bible, you do not surrender your faculties to a substance that can alter your reality. Now, when it comes to smoking weed, right, there's the whole thing about getting drunk and how many drinks it takes and all of that, and the Bible's clear. You know, is there ever a time, you know, where that's the best decision for us? Absolutely not. Is it okay to have a drink? I believe it is. You know, and to keep that, you know, within the place where it's under control. But when we alter our reality and we surrender to a substance outside of ourselves, I think that's in a different place. And I think you could put weed into that same sentence there and the same would apply. It only takes about 3 or 4 hits for THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana, to alter your reality. And I don't know how many more people we need to plow, you know, into minivans to know that an altered reality really does not benefit us. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, THC being the active ingredient. There was a day when we had a couple different campuses, and we were referring to the church as the Heights Community, and we were thinking, what email could we, you know, utilize? The Heights Community, THC.org. And we'd have a whole different, you know, attendance here today, but I think we did okay. So is smoking weed something that we should be involved in? And I think the Bible says no. No, because we do not surrender our reality to a substance outside of ourselves. Now, also in our day, there's something called CBD, right, and medicinal marijuana. And what they've done in that, they've taken the active ingredient, THC, out of it. And there's some apparently great benefits that are there from the result of medicinal marijuana. Is that okay? And I would say, you know what, that's a totally different thing, because now we're not altering any reality. And if there are benefits there, awesome. And if that helps people, I've heard many people undergoing chemo treatments who have had nausea and dizziness, and they took CBD oil and they felt great. And I think, you know what, praise God for that. We're talking about changing and altering our reality and being under the control of a substance outside of ourselves. Let's talk about tattoos. And you know, if we come down, you know, against tattoos, I think we're gonna have to look for half of our staff members to be replaced there. And so if you're wondering about that, and people say, well, hey, there's a verse about that. You shall not make any cuts on your body for the dead or tattoo yourself. I am the Lord. Well, case closed, right? We have a verse for it, but here's the thing. Did you notice the whole thing of for the dead? And there's a connection between cutting and tattooing there. This comes out of a section of the Old Testament where God is bringing his Hebrew people that he has just freed from slavery in Egypt and all the false gods that were there, the pagan gods. And he's bringing them into a promised land. And you know what's there? A bunch of pagan gods as well. And a lot of the things that are referred to in this section of the Old Testament are God trying to separate people from a lot of the beliefs in this world that run counter to the God of the Bible. And so God's saying, don't be like those other beliefs. You play for this team and not for that team. And yeah, there is a spiritual reality that has nothing to do with God. We've said this a number of times, and I don't know that we can say it enough. Just because it's spiritual doesn't mean that it's holy. And so God calls his people away from that and to himself. And this is particularly in connection to ceremonial rites, often for the dead, when people would tattoo themselves for that sake. So what does that mean for us today? You know, is it okay to get a tattoo? Yes, as long as we're not, you know, representing something that runs counter to God. And so maybe that would be something that would be satanic, maybe something, you know, like getting a Raiders tattoo, or a cat for that matter. Those things would be out. But other than that, yeah, it's okay. And if you're against tattoos, you know, it's interesting. There are some other things that if you're going to be consistent, I wonder if we would, you know, find that consistency. You shall not round off the hair on your temples or mar the edges of your beard. That's right there in that whole section too. And so we'd have to give very specific, you know, instructions to our hairdresser or the way that men are keeping their beards. You might have to be real selective about what you wear, nor shall you wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material. And sometimes we go, what was up with all of that back there? In the Old Testament, there are three kinds of laws. There's a moral law, what we're called to do, how we're called to act in ways that reflect God. And we are also given civil laws. God was working with a nation called Israel, and some relate to a nation. And we're given ceremonial laws. How do you worship God? How do you approach God? And God is being real specific at a time where there's so much paganism that he's calling people away from that and toward himself. All the ceremonial laws were completely fulfilled by Jesus. The only thing that carries over, and God's not working with a nation anymore, he's working with a church, and that's global, is the moral law. How we're called to act and how we're called to live. You shall not make any cuts on your body, and if you're against tattoos, I think it would also eliminate piercing our ears as well, because I think that would fall under that. But we don't seem to be against those, and sometimes we pick very narrow windows and pick and choose a little bit. And I think based on what this means in the Old Testament, is it okay to get a tattoo? Yeah. Let's talk about birth control here. And can I tell a cheesy joke before we start on that? So there's some couples sitting in a waiting room of a doctor's office, and a person comes out, you know, and goes, oh no, you know, my husband works for the Minnesota Twins, and he just told us we're going to have twins. Next couple comes out, and he goes, oh no, my husband works for 3M, and he told us we're going to have triplets. And then the guy just passes out on the floor, and they go, well, you know, what's up with him? I don't know, he works for 7-Eleven. We're not sure what that means. And, okay, cheesy joke. We know how God feels about children and about family. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply them as Adam and Eve, and fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens, over every living thing that moves on the earth. In the book of Psalms, it tells us that children are a heritage from the Lord and the fruit of the womb a reward. But does the Bible say, you know, that you cannot think and plan about how many kids you're going to have? Does that mean that we have to get a 15-passenger van, you know, or something, that we're just going to have to, you know, deal with a lot of kids? And just simply put, I believe the Bible does not speak against birth control. That we can think about that and that we can make a decision about that. You don't see a prohibition. People who are against any use of birth control will often point to a story in the Old Testament. It's kind of a interesting, weird story of a guy named Onan, and his brother died, and the custom back then was if your brother's brother died, you had to marry his wife and continue his lineage. And so there's a story where they're together, and then it says, and we're just going to leave this here, that he spilled his seed on the ground. And people say, see, if you don't kind of follow through on everything that was, you know, has that potential, you're not living up to God's standard. That's not what that story is about. And so I think to this, on the principle level, we can say that God is not opposed to bringing some sort of preventative into the family. We sure know how he feels about family, and that is very, very positively. And, you know, I think sometimes people say, well, you can't bring anything from outside, but if you do it naturally, kind of planning days and fertile days and non-fertile days, the intent really is the same, right? And also realize we're talking about a different line here between preventing pregnancy and ending. And so morning after type of things, that's in a whole different category and something that I think on the basis of principle would be something across the line and be a sin. Let's talk about body augmentation for a minute. And when we're talking about this, we're not talking about corrective surgeries. For instance, you know, cleft palate is a fairly familiar event in this world, and thank goodness, you know, that there are people that can correct that very simply, and there are doctors fly all over the world, and that is awesome. We're not talking about people who have had some form of surgery and are having reconstruction. You know what? That's great. We're talking about just the personal choice to alter the appearance of our body. Can we just leave it on that level as well? And again, I think in the Bible, we have to say that there's no prohibition, but you know, you might say, well, 2,000 years ago, they weren't even thinking about that because it wasn't a reality. And so, because there is nothing that speaks against it, I think it is fine to do that. But let me give you a couple provisions where I think it takes us across the line and where it would be wrong. When you seek security in your appearance, and sometimes isn't that the goal? You know, I think we see the billboards and the commercials around here. Utah seems to maybe be especially focused on our appearance. And if we are looking for our sense of identity to come externally about how others view us, I think we've missed something really important. Because there is a God who sees us the way that we really are. The good, the bad, and everything in between. And he loves us as we are. And he loves us so much that he left heaven and died for us. So your identity with God has nothing to do with the way that you look. But I fear we live in a time where there is so much dependence on that and such a deep hunger for people to view us externally a certain way. And may we be as certain as we can be about the vision with which God sees us, and that we would get our identity from him. And I think also when we have body augmentation to seek the attention via our appearance, we've crossed the line into something else. And if this is something, you know, that you pursue inside, you know, of your marriage, you know, God bless you. I would also say this in public. Modesty is a good thing and is an okay thing. And so just understand, you know, that God has called us in a personal life and also in a public life. And we can act in ways where we know that our security is found in him and not in the way that we look. Let's talk about gambling. Anybody think gambling is going to be a sin? Anyone want to bet $10 that gambling is going to be a sin here? Gambling is also one of those things that the Bible does not speak to specifically. It speaks to it in the realm of principle. Let me give you one example of that. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. And I would say, from where I stand and what I do, yeah, I've walked with some people who have lost their homes as a result of this, who have maybe lost a marriage as a result of this, and there are many pangs that can be down that road. But I think there's also a place where this is not across the line, and I think ways that we can ask ourselves some questions around this is when and where and why. So when, if there's the odd occasion, you know, when we're sitting in a living room playing a card game for quarters, that's really different than every week driving out to Wendover and putting the mortgage money on the line, right? Those are two very, very different things. Where is it? You know, again, is it in a place like a living room getting together with some friends, and maybe it's even more about the camaraderie than it is about what's happening on the table there? Or am I going to a place where there's scary people or half-dressed or not dressed people? I'm in the wrong place if that's the case. And why do I do it? Is it, you know, so that I can gain what I cannot gain by earning a living? Or is it because of some other reason that has to do with camaraderie and communion together with some other people? And I would say this, if more than one person has told you that you might have an issue with this, I'd listen to that, because chances are you do. And I'll acknowledge this up front. I believe that for myself, sports gambling could become an addiction for me. And down this road, there is, I think we all know, an enslavement where we might even want to say, you know what, I need to be done with that, but all of a sudden it's too hard to quit. I love sports. Gambling is a rush. And so I think that is a temptation. And in those moments, I think we need to understand ourselves enough to say, so I need to step back from that and probably not go there, because that has the potential to ensnare or enslave me. But if we're talking about getting a friendly game together and the stakes are very low, we're okay. Let's talk about one more thing, and let's talk about living together. And in what we do here at the church, you know, we encounter different situations where people are in a live-in situation without being married. And if you're not a follower of Jesus at this point, you know, let me just say that the things of the Bible, if you say, well, I didn't even sign up for that, I agree with you. The Apostle Paul in the book of 1 Corinthians, in the middle of a very difficult situation, says, what business is it of mine to judge the world? Right? So the Bible's not like this, you know, window out of which we look at the world and go, why aren't those people doing what God said? Well, they haven't even signed up for that. He does go on to say, though, that judgment begins with the house of God. And so if we have put hope and trust in Jesus, we're talking about, what is the God that loves me? What direction is he taking me? Reasons that I've heard for living together, one is financial, it's just cheaper. And right now we need to, you know, just make ends meet. And I've also heard, you know, that we try a lot of other things out. You know, why not try out, you know, something like that? We try shoes on before we buy them. We take a car for a test drive, and I don't know about you, I think marriage is on a different level than those things, but that's just me. But does God give us any direction? I've heard people say, well, the Bible doesn't say do not live together. It does not say it in those words. But can I share some words that it does say? Let marriage be held in honor among who? All. And let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and the adulterous. The phrase sexually immoral is a broad term that involves sexuality outside of the context of a marriage, a covenant relationship between one man and one woman. So is living together what God has for us? Nope, it's not. And living like we're married without being married is exactly what this is talking about. And I get that we live in a time where we think, oh my goodness, that is so old and outdated, but I gotta be honest with you, when the Bible speaks of something clearly, we're just gonna say clearly. Because I think to do any less than that really does a disservice to what God has for us. But here's the thing, and it's why I'm glad you stayed all the way through. Because whether it's this issue or any of the others that we have talked about, the role of the church is not to be the morality police of saying, well, here's a line, and man, it stinks for you to be across that line. Our statement of why we exist, just simply put, helping people meet and follow Jesus. And so when we've encountered situations like this, you know what we've done sometimes? We've helped a couple find a geographic different location to live until they got married. Or we said, hey, let's get you married, like today or soon or some. But the goal is not just to come down on people, that we are in this together to follow after God and what he has for us. And when it comes to people who have missed the mark, you know, if all the sinners were out of this room, I mean, I'd be talking to an empty room. Actually, I'm just kidding. The room would be empty, right? Right? So this isn't about, you know, all the righteous people and all the unholy people. This is us together pursuing what God has for us. And so the goal is to help. And the goal is to be with each other and for each other and help one another experience what God has for us. So when it comes to issues of our day, or really any day, who can I trust? Where can I go? What is going to tell me the truth? What is going to help me to live life the way that God intended to? I could look to me, right? I could look inward. I could look to we. That's our culture, right? And the direction of our culture. But boy, that's a shifting target out there. Or, and this is an old word, but it rhymes with me and we. And that is the, and that is to look to God. The God who loves us so much that he died for us. And if he can secure an eternal future with him, don't you think he can lead us and guide us day by day? And the God who wants to rescue us from everything that would separate us from him also wants to lead us and help us to navigate even challenging days like this. And they are. But there's a place to go, first and foremost. And a God who loves us and loves us enough to guide us. Would you bow your heads together with me? And so, God, as we race through some of the issues of our day, maybe more than anything else, would you help us to know that you love us and that even in some of the hardest moments, we can lean into you and not fear that what is waiting for us is condemnation or judgment, but instead, your guidance, your leading, your direction for us to experience life together with you. And so God, day by day, or especially in the hard moments, God, may we look to you and sometimes even wrestle with the hard things that would draw us closer to you and help us understand more of your heart and how much you just long to draw us close. And so God, even when it's hard, may we trust your heart and may we search for your hand to lead us through these days and beyond. Thank you for this time together. God, may it be for your honor and for your glory and help us all the more just to walk with you with hope and with confidence in the God that we have come to honor and worship on this day. And so we ask it all in Jesus' name, amen.